Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Today's podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about panic attacks.
Have you ever had a panic attack?
No.
I haven't either.
No. I mean, I've been stressed and anxious and things like that, but I've never had a clinically defined panic attack.
Right.
Thank goodness.
They're really frightening events.
When you think about what's happening biologically during a panic attack, it would be very difficult to manage.
Right. So, we have never experienced one directly, we certainly see a lot of people who have.
Right.
And invariably, they describe a terribly frightening event.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they do creep up.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about an article written by Robert Tabey, a licensed clinical social worker today, from Psychology Today, and the title was Panic Attacks, a Four-Step Approach to Prevention.
Right.
Now, I think it would be great if we started out this podcast with just a little bit of a biology lesson about what happens during a panic attack. So, and this will be brief, so those of you who aren't as into...
It won't be brief.
It will be.
No.
In your brain...
In the beginning... I could go make breakfast while you're giving this brief explanation.
If we could do a neurobiology lesson, that would be so much fun. If you guys want any neurobiology lessons, just let us know. We could do a whole string of them that we could put on YouTube. It'd be so awesome. But write that down. We should do that.
I have to put my glasses on.
You don't have to write it down. I'll remember because it's going to be recorded here on the podcast.
That's right.
So we'll remember.
We will have it forever.
That's right. So, but very quickly, there's a structure in the middle of your brain. A couple of thalamus, and all of the senses, that sensory information that come into our body, go there and then go to
it's
the
like
cortex.
Atlanta. It's like the Atlanta airport.
I was gonna say it's sort of it's the
if you're hub. Gonna if you're gonna go from Florida to Chicago,
yeah,
or Chicago to L.A. First, you gotta go through Atlanta.
Yeah, class I refer to it as Grand Central Station. It's like all the trains go there.
It's like all the trains end up in Grand Central Station.
Right. Mm-hmm. The only one that doesn't is olfactory, but that's what we'll leave smelling out.
I told you it wouldn't be brief.
So, all of the sensory information go there first, and then the thalamus disperses it to the appropriate brain region for interpretation, for processing. Now, what happens is that sometimes the thalamus decides that something is dangerous. And if it decides that something is dangerous, and I use the word decides loosely, it sends it to the limbic system instead of the cortex.
You've lost everybody now.
No, the limbic system looks like the Klingon bird of prey. It's like in the middle of your brain, and it regulates emotions and has the wonderful region called the amygdala in it that triggers fight or flight. A panic attack really is... more or less, biologically, fight or flight.
It is fight or flight.
Right. And it's not a decision.
For some reason, your brain has signaled that you're in danger.
Right.
Okay. We don't know why.
Right.
We all have a threshold. Mm-hmm. And, you know, information comes into your brain and you deal with it. But every once in a while, something very important comes into your brain and it triggers these subcortical structures.
Right.
Especially the amygdala. And it sends you into fight or flight.
Right. Mm-hmm. It is not a decision that's made.
No. It's not a conscious decision.
Right. It's not anything that happens in the cortex. It's not anything that you're even aware of. The analogy is, you know, when you're walking in the woods and there's a bear, you're running before you know there's a bear there.
Before you have cognitively identified the threat.
Right.
You're already in panic mode.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you've all probably experienced it, especially if you live in Florida, because if you've ever had anything sitting in your backyard for, you know, a period of time, and you went and picked it up, and you saw a water hose underneath the thing is, you likely jumped back, dropped it, and jumped back very quickly, thinking that thought it was a snake.
Right.
Before you realize, oh, it's just the water hose.
Right.
Because we respond biologically, physically, before our brain processes the information completely, because our thalamus sends it to, hey, that's a snake. Right.
Because we live in Florida, and right. in Florida, everything's trying to kill you.
Right.
You know, everything wants to kill you in Florida.
Florida is the United States' Australia.
It is. I mean, there's 100 ways to die in Florida.
That's right. That was kind of brief, a few minutes. But that's what happens, and it's unpredictable. Right. It comes upon you right. without your awareness, without your knowledge, without your planning, mm-hmm. and that's why some people who describe panic attacks, you could be walking in the grocery store, and it hit because your thalamus interpreted something, whether it was a sight,
a sound, something.
It mm-hmm. interpreted something, some sense. That there was a danger.
That's right. And again, it's not a conscious thing. You're not doing right. it on purpose. Of course, you're not going to do it on purpose. It's your brain reacting to something. Right. We're not sure what. So if you think of a panic attack as a subconscious reaction,
right.
okay, now what can you do about it? And he gives us four things, four right. steps that right. we can use to try to prevent panic attacks.
Right. Now, the first thing he refers to as first aid.
First aid, right.
And so what we're talking about here is thinking about possible attacks.
Right.
You know, okay, so how can we deal with the possibility of an attack? So if you're, one of the things that we think about with the diagnosis of panic attack or panic disorder mm-hmm. is because they come unexpectedly, a person begins to have anxiety
right.
about the possibility of an attack. Mm-hmm. And so you want to start thinking first about your physiological responses to things.
Right.
Usually, or many times, you can tell when something is coming on because your heart starts to increase, you begin to sweat a little right. bit, you begin to breathe quickly and more shallow.
Yeah, your breathing is shallow.
Mm-hmm. And so you have these physiological reactions
right.
in the anticipation of this mm-hmm. coming anxiety.
Right, but you feel it in your body first.
Right.
I mean, again, you're not aware
right.
of anything, but you do feel these body changes coming on. What you want to try to do is to prevent them from going into a full-blown
right.
fight or flight, what we call a panic mode.
Right.
And think of it as a normal curve where you mm-hmm. gradually get more and more and more and more aroused until mm-hmm. you reach a tipping point.
Right.
And what you want to do is try to prevent yourself from getting to the tipping point.
Right.
And he calls that first aid. What, mm-hmm. what can we do immediately to try to prevent the explosion from occurring
right.
or the full-blown panic attack from occurring?
Right. And now I think because of what we've talked about so far, I think that it's important to differentiate the fight or flight panic attack
right.
from this.
Right.
The mm-hmm. fight or flight panic attack hits you right. like that, and mm-hmm. and there's not necessarily a warning, which is what makes it so difficult, so impairing, so right. limiting, and so scary. These are attacks. Some people call them panic attacks. Some people just call them anxiety attacks
right.
that mm-hmm. that build, and so they're much more preventable because they build.
Right.
So they're still,
and you feel it coming.
Right. They're still grossly under the umbrella of panic attacks, but it's there are these slight variations right. in their presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So this first aid is for the one that builds, that you can sense it coming. And so just as a mm-hmm. very quick example of how that happens is when you're thinking about going to, you know, give blood, you can feel the anxiety coming on your way right. there. You want to be aware of the quickening mm-hmm. of your heart rate, the more shallow breaths that you're taking, all of those physiological mm-hmm. signs that let you know, hey, you're getting stressed, you're getting right. anxious, and if you're not careful, it's going to tip you over into a panic attack by the time you get there.
That's right. And so the signs of a panic attack are heartbeat, and mm-hmm. the ones you're going to notice the first are your breathing. And what you want to do...
Shaking, trembling.
Yeah, you're trembling. What you want to do is you want to overcome those feelings.
Right.
You know, the feelings are entering your body.
Mm-hmm.
And now you want to do something to try to overcome those feelings.
Right.
So let's take one of the symptoms, which is shallow breathing.
Right.
Okay. How do you prevent shallow breathing? By doing deep breathing.
Right.
Just do the opposite. Mm-hmm. Okay. If your heartbeat is racing, stop, calm down, right. and let your heart reduce or return
right.
to normal.
Right.
Okay. If you're trembling, if you feel yourself trembling, stop and get that under control.
Right.
But he had the good advice he gives is don't fight it too much.
Right.
Because you could make it worse.
Right.
All right. And so acknowledge that you're having a panic attack.
Right.
But address the symptoms.
Right.
And breathing is easiest. And that's why we tell people, or people, we say count to 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you count to 10? Because it takes your mind off the panic.
Right.
And puts it someplace else.
Right.
Okay. So you overcome the panic by counting to 10. Or you do deep breathing
right.
to prevent yourself from doing shallow breathing.
Right. Okay. And not surprisingly, deep breathing also slows your heart rate. It also
right.
helps calm the tremors and all those kinds of things. So
it's telling your body it's okay.
Right.
You know, whereas shallow breathing tells your body you're in danger,
right.
something's wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you want to, we did a podcast a couple weeks ago on emotions.
Right.
And we talked about that sometimes your emotions are triggered by your physiological actions.
Right.
So when you're behaving in an anxious way, your body's going to respond to that by making you feel anxious.
That's right. If your body starts doing that,
mm-hmm.
it's going to continue doing it.
Right. 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 So you want to pause and you want to take deep breaths and relax and try to deal with that first
right.
aid.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, the second one is anxiety desensitization.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So with this, what we're trying to do is we're trying to desensitize your body to whatever it is that's making you anxious.
Right. And we should say here that although there is something called generalized anxiety disorder,
right.
most of our anxiety is specific.
Right.
You know, going to the dentist,
mm-hmm.
going to the doctor,
right.
Walking into the principal's office
mm-hmm.
Or your boss's office.
Right.
So it's a specific
mm-hmm.
Anxiety.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when it's a specific anxiety like that, what you want to do is you want to desensitize to it.
Right.
And you usually do that through exposure,
mm-hmm.
Through experiential opportunities where you have good experiences in those settings.
That's right.
So, if it's for the principal's office, then, then you go into the principal's office and you have a chat with that
right.
the principal about the football match.
A pleasant chat.
Yeah, right,
so,
right.
So that no longer is a threatening place.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or you do the same thing with your boss or whomever it is or wherever it is that you're pretty anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Some people who are very anxious about the dentist, for example.
Right.
Just go sit in the dentist waiting room
right.
for a little while. Just
go
sit
talk
there.
To the dentist
go
as a person
dentist,
rather
right.
than as a professional.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so it reduces some of the anxiety because it demystifies the whole thing.
That's right. It desensitizes you.
Right.
You are less sensitive
right.
because you have exposed yourself to it.
Right.
Okay? We do that with animal, phobias
right.
and fears. These irrational fears that people have of things that aren't going to hurt them,
mm-hmm.
like most frogs aren't going to hurt you,
right?
You know,
right.
So you do exposure,
right?
And you get over it. So that's step two.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exposure therapy is really important to help you overcome some of those anxieties. So,
right.
The third is lowering thresholds.
Right.
And now we talk with people. You mentioned generalized anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned this to people a lot because The fascinating thing about anxiety disorders in general is that they all overlap. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you,
right.
you're talking about the same symptoms. It's just the different triggers that
different.
Cause those symptoms.
Right.
And so what happens is sometimes when you're dealing with one anxiety, one trigger,
mm-hmm.
That trigger can be triggered by another trigger. And
right.
so you have this sort of cascade of triggers
mm-hmm.
that can happen. And so what we can do is when we can lower your sort of baseline level of anxiety or stress,
right.
we tend to make it less likely that you're going to be triggered into a more
mm-hmm.
panicky
right.
Attack in the future. So I use the cup analogy.
Right.
If you have your stress cup and if your stress cup is, if your stress cup is pretty full,
right.
it's not going to take much
Doesn't
for it to
much.
Overflow into a panic attack.
Exactly.
So
mm-hmm.
if we can get that baseline stress cup level
right.
lower,
yep.
Through relaxation techniques, through meditation, through exercise,
mm-hmm.
through good sleep, good diet, things that we talk about all the time.
Okay.
When you can lower that baseline level of stress,
mm-hmm.
you decrease the likelihood that you're going to reach the threshold of a panic
right.
attack in the future.
And this is where medication fits in.
Right.
People say, do I need medication? Well, this is where medication fits in. Is
mm-hmm.
you might need medication to lower your threshold. It doesn't cure it.
Right.
This is step three. You might still have to do steps one and two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But medication helps you do those steps.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So step four
mm-hmm.
has to do with personality issues.
Mm-hmm.
Learned. And he refers to personality as things that we have picked up over our life.
That's right. Things we've learned
right.
to be afraid of.
Right. So here, you know, usually when we use the term personality, we're talking about something intrinsic, something that's
right.
sort of part of your temperament and, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. But what he's referring to here is a more broad definition of personality, which includes learned behaviors,
right.
learned experiences that make you afraid of something specific.
Right. And the classic example here, of course, is lightning and thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Most of us are startled by loud noises. But if our parents handle lightning and thunder
mm-hmm.
casually, chances are we're going to handle
right.
it casually.
Right.
If we express fear, they're going to express fear.
Right, right. And oftentimes, so this comes from experiences, as
right.
you said.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be, you know, if you were, when you were young, when
mm-hmm.
you were 4 or 5 years old, if a dog bites you, you're
right.
more likely to be anxious and fearful of a dog
right.
as you continue to grow up. And so when you have these negative experiences,
mm-hmm.
they're going to contribute to that overall perpetuation
right.
of anxiety.
Yeah, the dog biting is so sad because if you're bitten, and I don't mean mauled by a
right.
dog, I mean if you're bitten
mm-hmm.
you know, gently, you're afraid of all dogs.
Right.
Well, the yeah. fact that the reason we call these irrational fears is because most dogs are not going to bite you.
Right.
Okay, the overwhelming majority of 100
mm-hmm.
dogs, maybe one or two, might take a nip at you,
right?
But most of them are not going to,
right?
Okay, and that's what we're talking about at
yeah.
this stage.
Yeah, and that's and you know you mentioned it as irrational, and I think that people can see that, but it's again part of the biology that
mm-hmm.
changes that
mm-hmm.
that gets into that thalamus that we were talking
right.
about earlier. That when you're bitten by a dog as a
right.
child and you become fearful of dogs,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you're, you know, 15 years old, you're 6 foot tall
right.
and a chihuahua comes and barks at you and
you're
scared.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's not because of anything except that learned experience
That's
that you
right.
had earlier in life. So
your brain is going to remember those.
Absolutely.
Those experiences.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to recognize some of those things, some of those personality traits
mm-hmm.
that he mentions. So that you can deal and cope with those, because, and you would do it through the same way,
right.
through some desensitization
mm-hmm.
to help you overcome that deep-rooted
right.
Anxiety response.
That's right. And he doesn't mention this, but the other thing to remember is that as frightening as a panic attack is, it's not going to last very long.
Right.
Because it's tied to the fight or flight
mm-hmm.
structures.
Right.
Fight or flight doesn't last very long.
Right.
It's a high energy, very rapid high energy
mm-hmm.
response. It's going to pass.
Right.
So even if you reach that threshold,
mm-hmm.
that tipping point,
right.
and you go into a full-blown panic attack, it's not going to last more than a few seconds or a few minutes.
Right.
And
it doesn't feel that way.
Right. When in the middle of it, it's not going to feel that way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it will. It will pass, and then you'll be able to recover.
Right.
You may be exhausted.
You're probably going to be tired.
You may have
a high energy event.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
but it will pass. And then again, the important thing is learning to find a way to cope with it. And these are
right.
four great things to think about.
Yeah.
As
mm-hmm.
you're dealing with that, and if you can't do it on your own, get help. There's therapists,
right.
there's counselors, and psychologists that can help you overcome those things with maybe even without medication.
That's right, because in these four steps, there's a world of work that you
right.
can do within each step.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you can't or you don't feel like you can do this on your own, seek professional advice, because there's a world within each of the
right.
four steps.
Absolutely.
That somebody can walk you through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, all right. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. That's it for today. It's a great talk today. Included anytime we can talk about the brain a little bit is awesome. So, all right. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.